on radio, on YouTube, streaming live on investtalk.com, and for our podcast subscribers. This is Invest Talk. Independent thinking, shared success. Invest Talk is made possible by KPP Financial, a registered investment advisor firm serving clients throughout the United States. Here is KPP Financial Chief Executive Officer, Financial Advisor Justin Klein.
Good afternoon, fellow investors, and welcome back to Invest Talk. This is our Monday, May 12th, 2025 edition of Invest Talk. And as we work through these dynamic markets, we all should be ready to make changes when necessary, but also not react to headlines and focus on the facts on the ground, not hyperbole. And that's what this show is really about. And we do that by answering your finance and investment questions and helping you be ready for the fresh challenges that will always come. So our job is to prepare you, not just for tomorrow, but the weeks, months, and years ahead. So I'm Justin Klein, and my goal each and every day is to that end, help you take your next step in your own version of financial freedom. And once again, we do that by answering your questions, but also giving you data and perspective so that you can bring it back to your own personal situation, have the right frame of mind to make the right decision. Because your situation is different than everybody else's. You have your own idiosyncrasies of your personality, your loved ones, your career path, your lifestyle choices. All of these things lead up to something that's very different than the next person. And so it's about having the right principles in place so that you can apply them effectively to your own situation. Now, in just a bit, we're going to talk about today's market activity and run down the show topics. But as usual, let's tackle this first caller question now.
Hi, guys. I would like to ask about the company called Helmerich & Payne, symbol HP. Is this company good to invest in this environment? Thank you very much.
All right. Looking at Helmerich & Payne, and this is in the oil services business, engaged in the contract drilling of oil and gas wells, primarily in North and South America. So it's a fairly large company, that's before it's dropped. Now it's only about a $2 billion market cap. And that's because it's near a 52-week low, down around $19 per share. It was in the high 50s back in just 2022. But it's been in a downtrend really ever since. And its earnings back then, 2023, it was $4.15. So obviously the market was kind of anticipating that earnings bump. But earnings have reversed, $3.50 last year, and it's only supposed to make $1.99 this year. So a $19 stock, that looks pretty cheap, right? 10 forward-looking multiple. The problem is that historically, its profitability is all over the place. It's up and down, and now it tends to peak out on return equity or in the high teens, but that's the problem. That's when it tends to peak out. And then it sends a reverse and it averages closer to the single digits, high single digits, which is not a fantastic return on equity. And right now we're approaching that, about 10.6% return on equity currently. And they have a good amount of debt, about $1 billion in debt on a $2 billion market cap. Their free cash flow is about $200 million, which does give it a pretty decent free cash flow yield. But once again, those cash flows are very, very volatile. So I worry a lot about that. It's also in the oil service sector, which has been one of the worst sectors overall. And a lot of that's to do with domestic oil production and drilling is just slowing and in many instances reversing. And so I would worry a bit about that. I'd worry a bit about that trend in earnings. Like I said, headed lower this year, down by 43%. Its chart is not good, right? Its relative strength is 8. Whenever you have a relative strength in the single digits, that's pretty bad. So, you know, it's a name that of the oil service names, I don't hate it. I just don't like the space right now. I don't like the trends you're seeing in the stock, and I don't love it from a long-term profitability perspective. So I'm passing on HP, Helmerich and Payne. Now, our main focus point concerns this topic, 6 ways to use AI to improve your financial life. So we'll look at how artificial intelligence can help you master budgeting, investing, credit scores, taxes, retirement planning, etc., and help you make better decisions, more informed decisions like we do here on InvestTalk. We have other topics on the docket as well. One is in regards to the trade deal. What does it mean in context of global trade? You know, we have the pause from all the other countries. You have the UK quote-unquote trade deal. But what does this ultimately look like on a big scale? Okay, so we'll look at that. And then Berkshire, we know Warren is likely, you know, stepping down soon. And, you know, Berkshire Hathaway has changed a lot. And we'll talk about what those changes are and why they might have changed. And then lastly, if we have time, we'll look at Trump's executive order to cut prices of drugs to match other countries. I think that will have a profound effect on the drug industry. So we'll take a look at that as well. And we have voice bank calls. One is on investing in the USA, as well as Medtronic. And then we have some questions that came in via the comments section over on our YouTube channel as well. And of course, I welcome your finance and investment questions right now at 888-99-CHART. Now, as we head to a break, let me tell you about the new InvestTalk store. It invites you to make your destination for exclusive InvestTalk merchandise, all created for the savvy investor. And shop now, discover apparel and accessories that celebrate your financial journey. Just visit investtalkstore.com to shop the launch. Now, the phone lines are open, waiting for your questions at 888-99-CHART.
Serious investors are certain to have finance and investment questions.
Hello, Invest Talk. This is Jose from New York, and I'm looking into buying a small position in Dollar Tree or Dollar General.
And the best person to ask your question in the right way is you.
Hi, Invest Talk. I was calling in with a question on the stock Nike.
And 24/7, rain or shine, Justin Klein and Luke Guerrero stand ready to provide their unbiased answers.
Now, it is up into a little bit of resistance, so you probably want a little bit of consolidation here.
So this company does not capitalize itself with equity. It does not capitalize itself with debt.
Your participation makes InvestTalk better.
Let's play a caller question from 888-99-CHART.
This is James from Georgia. I was trying to call about ticker symbol SCCO.
So don't forget to call InvestTalk.
I appreciate the show, guys. Thank you.
888-99-CHART. Justin Klein is here, and he's ready with answers to your finance and investment questions. Call InvestTalk. 888-99-CHART.
Let's go talk to Jordan down here next to me in Dana Point, looking at Synchrony Financial, SYF.
Hey, Justin. Yeah, I own it. Looks like it had a pretty good run today. I'm wondering if I should sell or hang on to it.
Well, a lot does depend on the trends with the consumer, because Synchrony is directly linked with the health of the consumer, right? They help with private label credit cards. Think of, you know, local department store or big box retailer or whatever. They're not running their own credit cards. A lot of times they're working with Synchrony to run those cards. And if the consumer is starting to default on them, the Synchrony is taking the credit risk there, not typically the store owner. So that's That would be the issue. And that would be one reason to potentially sell Synchrony, would be if you do think that the credit markets and the consumer markets will deteriorate materially over the medium term. So that's what you have to ask yourself. What do you feel is going to happen with the broader economy and the consumer? What do you think, Jordan?
Okay. I don't know. It's a little up in the air right now. What do you think?
Well, I do think this is going to, the trade war is generally going to spark a weaker economy. Now, it's probably not going to be as bad with these 30%. Part of this will be eaten, but we all know that there's a correlation between the corporate profit margins and unemployment rate. So, or an inverse correlation, shall we say. So what happens typically when profits peak out, they start to decline a little bit. The employers, they pause hiring. That's happened a lot over the past month or so. A lot of uncertainty. There's been a lot of just corporate hiring freezes. Then the next phase, once profits don't recover, is to lay off workers that they feel like they don't need to try to improve profitability. When the top line is not growing and the economy is weakening, that's typically the next step. So I would be, while I'm generally a fan of Synchrony over the longer term, I do think near term there are some headwinds that I would worry a lot about. And if I look at earnings supposed to be up 17% this year, 13% next year. So that's good. But analysts are upgrading estimates so far. That is positive. But last quarter, revenues were down 17%. Okay. And so I would probably be more in the camp of at least trimming it on this rally and maybe even selling it outright if you do think we are going into recession later this year and next year. I do think liquidity generally is likely to ebb more in the back half of this year. This first half, I was always like, okay, things will probably hold together. And so far it's kind of has, right? Because we're down less than 1% of the year. But in the back half is probably where there will be more challenges. So I wouldn't be quick to sell it or quick to trim it, but you know, this is a good area to trim if you are thinking about doing so.
Right on. Thank you.
Okay. Thanks for the call. Now let's dig into the markets for today. And you had a decidedly positive day. The S&P was up about 3.25% on the day. The NASDAQ up about 4%. The Dow was only up about 2.8%. But a lot of bounce back, especially within tech, Apple, NVIDIA, Amazon, those all up 5% or more. Google, Microsoft up 2 or 3%. You had Netflix down 2.6%. That was the big winner on this tariff deal, where obviously they don't have to deal with a lot of the tariffs because it's just simply software and streaming. And so that's why that was weak. But across the board, you had pretty nice strength, even with the promise of the drug companies' pricing being cut. Those actually did fairly well. They were weak last week, so this was kind of sniffing out. The market was sniffing out the announcement for today on that front. And we had a bit of a bounce in that space along with the overall market. But generally, the market was strong because of the trade deal. Or you would call it a trade deal. It's a 90-day pause. It's bringing Chinese tariffs down to 10% for U.S. goods and U.S. tariffs on Chinese goods to 30% from 145%. So a pretty steep drop there. It was better than the floated idea that it would come down to about 50%. So 30% is much better. In many instances, probably most instances, the companies will probably eat or pass along the 30%, because a lot of times they don't have alternatives to 30 or to China. And so that they'll just import those goods, pay the 30, and maybe split the difference between raising prices and eating it on margin. So you'll probably see a flood of new imports between now and the end of the quarter that actually I think will drag down the overall GDP for this quarter, right? Kind of like it did for the first quarter. So overall, I think this is something that maybe they'll take advantage of that 30%, boost up inventory. Maybe this deal falls through and it goes back up after the 90-day pause. But what's most important is the market has this behind them. They'll refocus on other things like the CPI report tomorrow, and there'll be at least less uncertainty from the market. Now, companies will still have a lot of uncertainty, but the market uncertainty around tariffs, I think, for now, has abated a bit. So that was the market today. We're into major, major resistance around this 5,800 level, and we'll see if we can get through it between now and the end of the week. Now, we're moving to a break still to come. My focus point, more answers to your questions, but I encourage you to call now at 888-99-CHART.
In today's market, more than ever, you need unbiased investing guidance because it can help you achieve financial freedom. This is InvestTalk, and you've come to the right place. Justin Klein is here now, taking your calls live. So step up with your questions, 888-99-CHART.
Now, my main focus point today is about how to use AI to improve your financial life. AI is a great tool in many verticals in today's light, in today's world. But when it comes to finances, there are use cases. There are also pitfalls. And we'll talk a little bit about both. Now, the first way to use AI is to learn the basics and use it as a companion, shall we say, to explain fundamental financial topics, whether that is debt payoff strategies, whether that are investment principles that you want to learn more about, etc. Now, a human advisor will help you understand your full complete picture, including expenses, debts, income, etc. But understanding basics, kind of filling in the holes and being able to clarify for you is a great way to utilize AI. Number two is managing your budget. Doing a budget manually is no fun. Now, there are some apps that will help you with this process, and you can utilize your bank accounts and logins and pull the data in, and it'll create a budget for you. Some of them are just using basic algorithms. Some of them are using more AI type of tools. But either way, you can ask a chatbot to help execute on a lot of these budgetary items. For example, if you're able to build a budget using AI, which if you give them the enough data on your expenses, it will help you do that. But also do things like build a grocery list, right? If you have a budget of X amount for your groceries, maybe you have dietary restrictions, it can do all of that for you. Also, shop around, right? What is the, you know, shopping around for installation of new tires on your car, for example. Dry cleaning services. You know, various things that are in your budget, and it can help you find ways to stay within budget. Okay. Then investing. This is a good way to kind of filter out the noise of the headlines and in some ways automate your investment strategy and help you refocus on the strategy you are trying to actually execute. Large language models can help generate more level-headed responses. You know, oh, hey, there's this tariff news. Does this mean I should buy stocks? Well, it's going to kind of bring you down to history and of volatility and where things really are. Now, there are robo-advisors that do this. They have their own proprietary algorithms. They're not really AI bots. But when you're trying to filter out the noise, something like an AI chatbot that's dispassionate can kind of get you level-headed, okay? As opposed to calling your friend or calling your family member who might influence you and have their own emotions around the headline of the day. Okay. Number four, I love this one. Your credit score. There are various factors that go into getting you a good credit score and things that could be dragging it down. Well, an AI can do a pretty good job of helping you understand how to improve it, especially if you give it the factors, right? What is your debt to income ratio? Do you have any delinquencies? What are all those different factors that maybe you can go get from a Credit Karma, for example, and, you know, see your credit score and see where those various factors line up. And then as opposed to, you know, the one issue with Credit Karma is they're going to try to push you in a certain direction to help themselves make money. Whereas a AI chatbot is not going to do that. They're going to be very, once again, dispassionate about how to improve your credit score. Number five, I like this one as well. Doing your taxes. Now, it's not going to do your taxes for you, but it certainly can help you get a little more color on IRS rules that can be difficult to digest. And if you need clarity on something, you can actually give those chatbots a directive on your own personal situation. Now, ultimately, it's still up to you to make those decisions. There's a lot of gray areas in taxes, especially if you are your own, you know, business owner and you're trying to figure out what is tax deductible or not. It will help you, but it's up to you ultimately, or a tax professional, a CPA, for example, to really give you an understanding of where you are in the gray. Are you closer to the red potentially, or in the black, right? And so it's something that it can assist, but it's not going to give you the ultimate answers. And then same with retirement planning. It can help put together a basic retirement plan, but this is something we do for clients. And it's really about understanding broader goals and running. We still run different simulations, just like AI can, but really speak to your needs, which can be a difficult thing to really communicate to a chatbot. Now we're moving into a break on our Invest Talk phone lines. Never close. It's 888-99-CHART. Coming up soon, I will answer a new YouTube question.
Every investor is working to build a secure financial future. How they get there and when they get there, that depends on many factors. The more you learn about how the market works, the better your chances for success. So don't forget to call InvestTalk, 888-99-CHART.
Hi, gentlemen. This is Brett from New Jersey. I'm calling about ticker symbol MDT. That's Medtronic. I know you.
Recently, I had a somewhat unpleasant shopping experience. Not because the store was bad, but because the checkout system was very slow. And that was annoying. As I was waiting, I realized that I might have to run to the ATM to get cash. And that just made things worse. That was a frustrating experience. Then, about 2 weeks ago, I was at a restaurant that used Square. That transaction was quick and easy. The staff was able to focus on great service instead of fumbling with tech issues. So I decided to look into Square, and here's what I learned. Square's point-of-sale system is user-friendly and highly intuitive, plus Square provides the tools needed to manage behind-the-scenes work too. In fact, business owners can track sales, stay on top of inventory, and get a better understanding of their customers, all in the same place. The reporting features are especially helpful when trying to make sense of what's working and where to focus one's time. Square supports all major credit cards and payment methods, including contactless options like Apple Pay and Google Pay. So checkout is fast and easy. If you happen to be a business owner, Square makes it simple to set up an online store in just a few minutes. So Square is perfect for those wanting to expand beyond brick and mortar. Square is designed for businesses at every stage, whether they are just getting started or looking to grow. It delivers the tools to do both. Square keeps up, so you don't have to slow down. Get everything you need to run and grow your business without any long-term commitments. And why wait? Right now, you can get up to $200 off Square hardware at square.com/go SQARE.com/invest. That's SQARE.com/GO/invest. Run your business smarter with Square. Get started today.
You guys were pretty high on this a while back, and I just wanted to know if you still are, hoping for a little evaluation on it. Also, I was wondering, with your KPP premium newsletter, I was wondering if we could get a sample of one of those just to see what it looks like. All right, thanks for all that you guys do. I appreciate it. Have a good day.
Well, you can always go to our website and check out a sample. It is there. So if you click on KPP Premium Newsletter and the Investment Education section, there is a sample link. This is example newsletter right in the middle of the page. So go ahead and take a look at that. Now, as for Medtronic, yeah, we still own it for clients. We still like it. One of our favorite names within the healthcare space. We've been underweight the space for a while, mainly because of the drug companies. We've been kind of seeing the writing on the wall there with RFK and him coming in and trying to disrupt the medical industry, especially the drug companies, who he sees as not the best solution for the health problems of the country, more trying to push towards preventative care, for example. And clearly this news today is one example of that. The new Stanford professor that is the head of the FDA, and likely to change the way drug approvals will be going forward. All of that just means the pharmaceutical side of the healthcare space is likely to struggle for some time. Now, we've always said the device companies, they're kind of in a different realm, right? Because there's not much preventative that can go towards solving a hip replacement or a knee replacement or, you know, a valve replacement in your heart, and a stent, for example, if you have a heart attack. So, you know, I think these medical device companies are going to come out of this in pretty good shape. Overall, though, Medtronic, it's a very profitable name, about $5.5 billion in free cash flow trailing 12 months on about $110 billion market cap. So about a 5% free cash flow yield, which is pretty solid. Nice dividend yield, about 3.25%. And just nicely profitable and buying back shares consistently with that cash flow, which we like. Not a lot of debt, only about $15 billion in net debt on a company that large is really not much. Earnings for this year is supposed to be up about 5% to $5.46. So not a fast grower, but consistent, especially with an aging, baby boomer population. We think there's some secular tailwinds to their products. And what they do is they make pacemakers, defibrillators, heart valves, stents, insulin pumps, etc. So like I said, this is right in the heart of the medical device field, and it's one of the largest in the world, being $110 billion market cap. So if you're looking for more exposure to healthcare space, which, there are a lot of landmines in that space, we think this is a solid company. Not super exciting, not a huge grower, but just a very strong, consistent business paying a nice, solid dividend. So we still like Medtronic's MDT. Now, from time to time, we also receive Invest Talk questions from the YouTube comment section of our Invest Talk channel. And here's one that came in earlier. Ugar says, hello, is it a good idea to hold this stock ASML for a long-term investment? Let's pull up ASML. This is one of those large chip equipment manufacturing businesses. About $300 billion market cap. They're out of the Netherlands. And they have some of the most cutting edge technology within the space. And they make lithograph systems that are made to print and produce the semiconductors. Earnings this year, so we have 33%, then 15% next year. So you are expecting a earnings growth deceleration, let's just say that. But it is a name that has come down with the whole semiconductor space. Let me pull up a chart here. Now, its relative strength is 42, so kind of middling overall, the broader market, not terrible, not amazing. And part of that is the space as a whole. Now, there are some tailwinds of trying to reshore manufacturing of chips here, but there are also some risks to with the tariff regime that the demand for chips, which has been waning, will continue. Overall, though, I do think it's a good business. The question is this a time to get in? And I would argue it's probably not the best time, but it's also not the worst time being, let's see, well off its 52-week high. It's down about 32% from its 52-week high. And its ultimate high was up around $1,100 per share. Is that where we were? I'm trying to find the all-time high. Yeah, around $1,100 per share. Now we're at $750. Okay. So it's starting to improve, like the whole space. I like the profitability. The worry is, once again, the slowdown in the business overall, the valuation that it's trading at, which is not cheap still, even after the drop, but it's very profitable, 53% return on equity. And so is it a good long-term hold? Yes, I would say it's a good long-term hold. The question is, will there be another leg down in the broader economy and the demand for physical products and thus deployment of new chip capacity, which was really built up over the last couple of years? That's why the earnings went from $6.90 in 2019 to $21.95 in 2023. Dipped down to 1992 last year, and then supposed to be all-time high, like I said, $26.52 this year. So good business, but there's still some risk here with the global economy slowing. The question is, how much will it really slow? Now let's touch a bit on the trade war and where we're at. What's the reality on the ground? We have the headlines, right? Bringing down tariffs to 30%, bringing down our tariffs, our Chinese tariffs on our goods to 10%. And this is a 90-day pause and gives some breathing room for a negotiated deal. And the market obviously liked that. The problem with this, as well as the UK deal, is that they're not binding. And so there's a lot still up in the air. You know, you have the headline numbers, but these trade deals, there's a lot of devils in the details. And so it's hard to work out exactly what has been agreed to, because when it's not binding, there's not much that really you can hang your hat on, because things can move, right? And that's the challenge with this. Overall, the effective tariff rate is now into the high teens, I believe, on 16-17% trade weighted, which is less than the Smoot-Hawley tariffs, which are around the 25% level, but well higher than where we were just a handful of months ago. Now, the China's U.S. non-reciprocal tariffs, the fentanyl tariffs, are still high, like I said, 30% there. And it gives China a reason to come back to the table and agree to more liberalization, more maybe buying of U.S. goods and reforming their system, right? Protecting IP, for example. That's one big kind of sticking point, I think, for the United States. And, you know, it's probably where, if you're talking about abuses, China is the most abusive, right? Is completely ignoring RIP and allowing for knockoffs, things like that. But even though there's this temporary pause, we're kind of back to where we were in Trump's first presidency, which is China supposedly liberalizing and being more fair, but in reality, not really doing much. That's what happened under the first deal. Remember, we had a deal with China before under Trump 1.0. They talked about buying a bunch of U.S. soybeans and other products. Guess what? Didn't happen. They bought none of the extra $200 billion of U.S. exports that were announced in Trump's first trade deal. So stick them to this, right? Is China doing the same thing, kind of promising they'll do X, Y, and Z to get these deals done? And will the Trump administration hold their feet to the fire or not? Now, the baseline 10% looks to be unavoidable. That's here to stay. Even see that with the UK deal. If you go look at the UK deal, the tariffs are still considerably higher than where they were just a few months ago on both sides, on our goods that ship to the UK and vice versa. So I think what you see here, and this happened in 2018, you had all these tariffs. And if you remember 2018, the Christmas time, 2018, the market was really rough. 2018 was a rough year for markets. Not terrible. You know, we didn't slide into a recession or anything like that, but it was a lot of malaise. And the tariffs, if they're held right now for an extended period of time, are going to be much higher than those. And so I do think these are still at levels that are contractionary for the economy over the medium term. Because like I said, there is a strong correlation between corporate profits and unemployment, or inverse correlation. Because when the first thing companies do when profits peak and start to decline a little bit, well, they pause hiring. And you've already seen that with the JOLTS data, right? Job openings. That's been coming down considerably. The next phase is once they realize, okay, profits aren't going back up, what are the ways that we can improve our margins and get back to a semblance of previous profitability? Well, one way to do that is to trim the fat. And we all know if a company gets big enough, there's always some fat to trim. And that's where layoffs tend to come in. So that's kind of where we're at now with these tariffs. Better, but still high enough to where it's shrinking margins, shrinking profitability. And ultimately, that will feed into markets, feed into the harder data. Now let's play another fresh question from 888-99-CHART. And this comes from an InvestTalk listener in Denmark.
Hello, InvestTalk. Greetings from Denmark. I have a question regarding your remark that the USA is turning into an emerging market, which you said following my question on the emerging markets bond ETF. I was wondering if you could expand on that, since it means a lot when I think about investing in American assets. You know, there's no way I can invest in U.S. assets without taking the currency risk in regards to the dollar. And as you say, the government in America seems to be becoming increasingly likely to undermine the stability of the economy or the stock market. But let me hear what you think of it. Very much appreciated. Thank you for your good show.
Well, I say that we're becoming more like an emerging market because of the way markets are reacting to a weaker economy. You know, before it used to be, hey, the market sells off, there's a flight to safety, money flows into the dollar goes up, money flows into treasuries, rates go down, treasuries rally, right? That's the flight to safety type of reactionary mechanism that happens in an economy that still has long-term tailwinds, that has rule of law, that has the stability that the United States kind of has had for, you know, my lifetime and beyond. In typical emerging markets where there's a lot of debt, a weaker economy actually does the opposite, right? Money flows out of that economy because there's more concern over potential economic collapse, a political collapse, right? Which you've seen throughout the years in many of these emerging markets like Brazil and many in Asia, etc. So when you have a sell-off in the markets like we had post-Liberation Day early last month, And initially, rates fell, bonds rallied for 36 hours roughly, and then they reversed and rates went up and the dollar went down. So it was very different type of reaction than we're used to here in the United States. And that's because our fiscal situation, along with a political environment that is becoming more polarized, more toxic, more volatile, I think all of that lends to an environment that is more akin to an emerging market as opposed to a stable ecosystem that has been kind of the basis for the United States for a long time, right? Many decades. And so that's how it's shifting into more of an emerging market economy. This is Invest Talk. I'm Justin Klein. We have one goal here each and every weekday, and to help you achieve your own version of financial freedom. And our work continues after this final break. So get your questions in right now at 888-99-CHART.
...2025 rolls on, and you've got finance and investment questions for Justin Klein and Luke Guerrero. Call InvestTalk, 888-99-CHART.
My name is Evelyn, calling from KDOW. I was thinking of adding Coca-Cola Company to my portfolio, and I would appreciate it very much if you can suggest an entry point for this Coca-Cola company, and I'd be listening. Okay, thank you. Bye.
All right, looking at Coke, K-O is the symbol. And if you look at profitability, its earnings are expected to go up 3% this year. But that's some pretty meager growth, especially when you're trading in the mid-20s. Multiple price to sales ratio is at 6.4, which is on the high end of its range over the past 10 years or so. So I don't love that. And then if you add on top of that, the profitability has certainly come down a bit. So I'm not a big fan of that. Cash flow has reversed recently. You know, I just don't see this as a good value at this point. So if I'm going to give you a number to get into this, this is trading at $69 and change right now. I probably wouldn't buy this until the low 50s. So if you want a number, that's where I would buy Coke, in the low 50s. Thanks for the call. Now, lastly, let's talk about, that's a good segue to Berkshire Hathaway. And the antithesis of Elon, which would be Warren Buffett, he is stepping away. But I want to take a look at how Berkshire Hathaway has changed over the last 40 plus years. Now, Warren's formula for success is fairly simple, but not understood by many. First is to buy safe, high quality assets and then actually use a bit of leverage and manage that leverage carefully and stick to the strategy for a long period of time through good and bad markets. Now, while that general strategy hasn't changed, the model has changed a bit, meaning the companies that they've owned has evolved. Early in Buffett's career, it had more to do with buying deep value, very undervalued assets that were trading at cheap prices, especially names that have maybe babies been thrown out the bathwater, right? They had some sort of bad situation that turned valuation south for a short period of time, but he had faith in their staying power and the turnaround. Now, that was early on, but as it evolved, he actually started to buy more stable, high-quality businesses. Think of Apple, for example, or Amex. Okay. Now, if you look at the top five holdings from 1984, Geico was the top holding, 20% of the portfolio. General Foods was 11, Exxon was 7, Washington Post was 7, and Time Magazine was 5. Fast forward 20 years to 2004, Amex was its top holding, 6%, a lot more diversified. Coca-Cola, 6%, Gillette, 3%, Wells Fargo, 2%, and Moody's, 1%. Fast forward another 20 years, Apple now the top holding. This is as of last year, 9%. Amex still at 6%, kind of static from 2004. B of A, Bank of America, 4%. Coca-Cola went from 6% to 4% of the portfolio, and Chevron at 2%. So what you can see is 40 years ago, he was focused on different types of businesses. Insurance mainly, even though Geico is still a very important part of the business. You no longer have any of the publishers. And what's important to note is he didn't pick the top in the publishers. Okay, so don't think that he has perfect timing either. It's more about continuously buying boring businesses. Not picking the top or the bottom. Picking companies that generate cash and have consistency over the long term. And recently, he's been lowering his leverage on the portfolio from about 2.5 in 2000 all the way down to about 1.3 today. So a lot of that has to do with selling off assets. Others could be, I'm doing this because, hey, the world's more volatile and I want more leverage. So who knows why, but that's what he's been doing. I'm Justin Klein. This completes another Invest Talk program. We thank you for listening. We encourage you to tell your friends and family about our free podcast downloads, which you can find anytime at iTunes, Spotify, or Google Play. Be sure to rate and review on iTunes as well. And if today's show made you think about your own financial picture, your investments, taxes, retirement, or whether it's all really working together, let's talk about it. We offer no-cost portfolio review assessments to help you bring clarity and confidence to your situation. So if you need help, head over to investtalk.com, click on the portfolio review button. Independent thinking, shared success. This is Invest Talk, the name.
Invest Talk is a trademark of KPP Financial. Because of the nature of the interactive dialogue inherent in the format of this program, it's important for the listener to understand that not all comments made will apply to them. Specifically, nothing said shall be taken to be investment advice, or shall statements on this program be considered an offer to buy or sell security. Because such advice is rendered solely on an individual basis and at times will require that the investor review a prospectus before investing. InvestTalk is a copyrighted program of Klein, Pavlis, and Peasley Financial, a registered investment advisor firm which retains all rights. For more information regarding KPP's investment advisors, call 1-800-557-5461. Thank you for listening, and your comments and questions are welcome on our 24-hour listener line at 888-99-CHART.